You're in a good place now. You are listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. What do you do when enough is enough? You know, tonight we're exploring drug addiction, alcohol addiction, pharmaceutical addiction, and what to do when somebody you know is getting completely out of hand. And I think a lot of people can resonate with this right now. A lot of people listening right this second go, oh my gosh, man, Ashley's in it to win it. I can't tell you how many people I know are currently in the process of being admitted into rehab. There's a large group of people who don't know what to do with their family member or friend or loved one who can't seem to kick the problem. And so there's this issue. You know, think about it. Well, I think most of us have all been there to some degree or another, either dealing with a family member, a relative, a girlfriend or boyfriend, a husband or wife, a child even one of the kids that we realize has gotten completely out of control on drugs, alcohol, or pharmaceuticals. And the thing is that all three of these things are just as addictive. There's not one thing that's, oh, well, that's better than the other. And I used to think that there was one that was better. I used to say, well, the drugs, the street drugs are the absolute worst. That's the absolute worst addiction. And then the second thing would be alcohol, and the third would be pharmaceutical. But you know what? I've started changing my tune a little bit when I've seen some people get completely addicted to pharmaceutical drugs. So tonight we're going to talk first off about how we can identify, how we can ID the situation, what we need to look for, what we need to see in the reality and the clarity of such things in order to make the right decision, to gauge our response, to choose wisely. And later on in the hour, I'm going to tell you some of my biggest clue in, some of the things that clue me in every time with a client, a patient, or a friend who needs help immediately. Because there's a lot of things that we let kind of fly because, you know, most of us may have had, there's a lot of us out there that have dealt with alcohol, drugs, pharmaceuticals, but having a complete full-on addiction is different. And so a lot of times we have a tendency of kind of like spitballing everything into the way we would live our reality, the way we would respond. And we have to look past that, and especially in tonight's conversation, I'm spelling it out for anybody that's wondering if they need to go the extra mile to help a situation at its core. And I've been on several sides of this equation because I was one of those big believers that, you know, I kept listening to the addict. I would keep listening to the addict tell me, I got it all under control and this is my last night out and I'm going to pack it all up and go into rehab next week. And I remember dealing with that with somebody in particular for longer than I care to actually say. Longer than I care to say, because for some of you, you'd be like, man, what is Ashley? What's going on here? I mean, is she hard-headed or what? But for anybody out there that's listening to this show right now, you know how it is when you're trying to deal with an addict. You're trying to reason with an addict when there is no reasoning to be had. You can't reason with somebody who's under the influence of drugs or alcohol and cannot think clearly. And what I'm saying to you is this. Think about it. When was the last time that you tried to respond and have a communication, have a conversation with somebody who had been drinking for 15 hours? And somebody that's been drinking for 5 hours. Let's just put it that way. Let's say somebody that's had more than six drinks. When was the last time you tried to reason with somebody like that? And how well did it go? How well did that go? So now let's take that five or six drinks and that reasoning that you tried to do, all that great reasoning and I'm sure some of y'all use like reverse psychology, and then you had all this other stuff that you probably tried to use. Did that work? Did it work to make you angry? Sure. A lot of times it backfires because there is no reasoning with somebody who's under the influence. Now, let's take the someone under the influence and say that they're under the influence 5 to 7 days a week. So 5 to 7 days a week, and for the most part, most people who are addicted, they hide it. And they're under the influence 7 days a week, 24/7 when they're awake. And so when you try to reason with somebody who's kind of gone into that level of addiction, you're trying to reason with an addict. When was the last time that ever worked for anybody? I've tried to reason with addicts in my past, and you know what? That was very foolish, a waste of time. But it was funny because in the beginning, I thought that I was making headway. I felt like, oh my gosh, I have figured it out. I figured out what all the brilliant psychiatrists and psychologists have been trying to figure out for these hundreds of years. And I figured it out right now. Well, you know what? I didn't figure out anything. You know what I figured out is a way to get yourself blue in the face, be stressed out, angry, have a little bit of resentment, and on top of that, have a stomach ache because you're not getting anywhere at all. You're not. Addicts will do all kinds of things. They will argue with you. They will fight with you. They will fuss with you. They will claw you if they have to. But better yet, they'll tell you whatever they have to tell you to get so they can get away from you and you get off their back. I've been in some of these conversations with people in the past where I thought I was getting somewhere. And I guess I was just talking to them too much that they literally could not stand it, that they wanted to say anything they could to get away from me. And so all of a sudden, in the middle of the conversation, you'd be like, you know what, you're right. I have a problem, and I need to get help. And you know what, I got to do it now, because nobody, it's not going to happen any sooner. So I'm going to stop doing what I'm doing, and I'm going to seek help. And I'd be like, really? What do you need from me? I'm willing to help in any way. Well, you know, I really could use some names of some good rehab facilities and somewhere that you would suggest. Okay, I got that. I can get that to you tomorrow. Okay, yeah. Great. And then the next response would be like, you know, I've thrown all my drugs away, and so. I don't have any drugs in the house. Okay, great. Well, this is great. Okay, great. And I remember feeling so special that I had thought that I had done something. And you know what? Nothing had happened. Nothing, not one thing. They were just trying to get me off the phone. They were trying to get me off the phone or out of their house so that they could go do some more drugs. And you know what? Eventually, I figured that out. Yeah. And so tonight, I'm talking about how you can identify the situation. There will be some humor within the show as well. There will be some stuff that you can laugh about. Because you know what? It's all about humor, baby. But at the same point in time, I'm going to help you really identify, first off, the situation, be able to see the situation for the reality, take the gloves off, see it for what it is. Later on, I'm going to give you some of the big giveaways that I think are very important to recognize. I'm also going to begin talking about rehabs, how effective they are, what you can do. Talking about also the people on the street, the homeless percentage, but also better yet, when enough's enough, and you've done everything until you're blue in the face, I'll be telling you what you can do tonight to change this all around and help them out. Because there's only a certain way that this works. And I've tried doing it several different ways with several different people, but you know what? From everything I've seen, everything I've done, everything I've been involved with, when I'm helping somebody to get off drugs, I figured out the one sure plan that works every time And it works every time because it's the one thing that none of us want to do. But it's the exact equation for turning an addict into a respectable person in society. And not only that, turning the addict into somebody that actually loves and respects themselves and gets it for the first time. Stay tuned when we return. We're talking about how you can identify the situation and what you need to know to take this enough situation off your back and get on living. Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back this time, and we'll be back in two shakes.
Turn it up and jump in the deep end on Perspectives. Now, here's Ashley.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. Tonight I'm talking about when enough is enough. We're exploring drug addiction, alcohol addiction, and pharmaceutical addiction, and what to do when somebody you know, somebody you love, someone you care for, someone you respect, has an addiction that's gotten out of hand. And tonight we're going to begin talking on the perspective of how to identify the situation, because a lot of us don't know how to identify it. How do we go by identifying it to make the right choices, to take the right actions? But better yet, let's talk about identifying the situation first off, because unless we know what we have going on, we can't treat it. The first way to begin to identify the situation at hand is to look at the situation in honest reality. Honest reality. I know a lot of you go, well, what's the difference between reality and honest reality? Well, you have reality, and then you have a sugar-coated reality. You have a reality that we choose or hope it is there, but it's not. And let me give you an example real quick from a non-drug perspective, because I think this might put into perspective for a lot of you. My last dog, my dog now is Buddy, but my previous dog, I had two previous dogs, Alex and Dolce. And Dolce, at the time, was the love of my life. I mean, I adopted him at the SPCA. We were together for a long time. And the October before I had to put him down, he lived till about 12. The October before that, it was Halloween time, and I knew that there was something wrong, and so I ended up finding a little lump on his tail. And I brought him into the doctor, and they ended up biopsying it. But when they did the biopsy, they couldn't find anything. There was no like cancerous cells. They couldn't identify it. It was inconclusive. And he was fine at that time as far as his weight's concerned. However, November, December, January, by January, I was still going to the doctor, getting shots for him, taking care of it, but he had lost a lot of weight. And he was about a 75-pound, full-muscle Dalmatian. And I used to live in Miami Beach, South Beach, and back in the day, back in the late 90s, early 2000s, and man, those were some great times down in South Beach. And I would walk Dolce, and every single person would stop on that street and be like, man, that is the best-looking dog. Do you give that dog steroids? I would be like, no, I don't give the dog steroids. Like, oh, yeah, right, okay. I mean, he was full muscle. And he was full muscle up until that October. And then we had that biopsy, and things started going downhill. And why I'm telling you this story is because sometimes we get so close to a situation that we are unable to see it for its true and honest reality. And in this situation, I loved Dolce. I still love Dolce. Dolce's passed in this physical realm, but I still love him, the spirit. And it was about January, and I remember I started feeling like he was getting sicker and sicker, and I kept going to the doctor and getting him shots and stuff like that. And everybody at the vet's office was amazing, and they actually sent a bouquet of flowers, a large bouquet of flowers, when Dolce ended up passing. But however, I remember hanging out with Dolce and everything. And in the last few weeks of his life, we took trips, we drove around, we did all kinds of stuff. And I took a lot of pictures in those last few weeks. And after I had to put him down, I remember it might have been 3 days after. And I had been not inconsolable, but just really down and crying a lot and not eating and that kind of sort of thing. And I looked at these pictures and man, he was so thin. I mean, his head was like half the size of his head. I mean, it was kind of like a shrunken head. And what I'm saying is that I was so close to it that I didn't see it. I didn't want to see it. Isn't that the truth? I didn't want to see it. I wanted to assume and to accept the fact that everything was just fine and there was everything was fine, everything was right, everything was perfect, and it wasn't. And then it was funny, then I started looking at myself. And I began to realize how much I had gained. I had been eating my emotions for a while. And people would kind of make jokes about it, especially my husband and close family, because when we go out to eat, like, for example, I remember there's a breakfast place that we went to, and they have the, like, the Hungry Man's Feast or something like that. The Texas Feast. Okay, that sounds good. It's called the Hungry Man Texas Feast, something like that. And I ordered it at this place a lot. And it came with 3 eggs and toast and all this stuff. And I'd be like, I need to add 2 eggs, a second side of toast. I mean, I'm serious. I was eating 5 eggs. I mean, it was just insane. I'm surprised I didn't gain more weight than that because I was really active. So that's probably the only reason. But I gained about 25 pounds during this process. And I never once realized it until I started slimming down. And then I look back at the pictures. I'm like, oh my gosh. And so what I'm saying is that in tonight's conversation, we have to have the honest reality. And if you're dealing with this with a spouse or a loved one, a child, a good friend, heck, some of you might be dealing with this with a coworker who you've gotten close to who has an acute drug problem, alcohol or addiction. So let's talk about the reality. First off, the reality depends directly related to the way somebody looks. In the beginning, people are able to hide certain things. Toward the middle, they get sloppy. And toward the latter time, they let it all hang out. Okay? Their looks. If you look at their weight, when people are doing a lot of drugs, when they're doing a lot of pharmaceuticals, their weight goes down. Their weight goes down. For alcohol, sometimes the weight goes exceedingly up, except for women who choose not to eat, but just drink their food. So what I'm saying is that there's different equations with the weight. So the weight could go up sometimes. Normally the weight goes down unless somebody might be addicted to a lot of pharmaceutical painkillers where they are probably still eating, but they're bloating up quite a bit too. You get kind of bloaty looking on that. And that's something to take. And a lot of times when people are doing pain pills, they're also coupling that with alcohol. That's a key. The look of the person is a big thing. Their teeth, their eyes, below their eyes. Do they have a lot of black shadow below their eyes? Their overall health. Very much matters because somebody that's getting constantly sick, that's a red flag, is definitely not taking care of themselves. Now, that might have to do with the fact that they just don't take care of themselves. I know people that don't do drugs or alcohol at all. They're school teachers, for goodness sakes. They don't take care of themselves at all. They don't take care of their body. They're constantly ill. They constantly have problems. They have high blood pressure, anemia, going in for surgeries every other year. But the way that somebody takes care of their overall health, as well as how nourished are they? When people are doing a lot of drugs, a lot of hardcore drugs and no alcohol, they have a tendency of being extremely thin. Gaunt, really. very extremely thin. And you can tell by the way they look because their face is kind of like pulled, kind of very gaunt. You have that really big time jaw predisposition, very hollow cheeks. Those hollow cheeks are a big hit because the hollow cheeks, if somebody hasn't had hollow cheeks until then, you know something's up. The darkness under their eyes. Also, when you're around them, a lot of times when people are addicted, they refuse to have any sort of eye contact. That is a very big key, eye contact. How much eye contact do they support with you? And the thing about addiction is this, is that they already feel bad about what they're doing for the most part. Some people don't when they're in this mania state, in a euphoric state where they're doing cocaine and ecstasy or meth and heroin. But the thing is that for the most part, they feel very, very bad, to some degree guilty about what they're doing. And so because they feel bad about it, they think you know what they're doing. They're not going to look you in the eye. And so that eye contact is a big deal. And if you're around somebody that's not giving you any eye contact, that's reason, especially if it's coupled with any of the dark circles, the hollow cheeks, the overall health, the malnourishment. And last but not least, before we go to break, what about being under the influence? And a lot of times, if you have not ever been on drugs, alcohol, pharmaceuticals, and never abused them, you might not know what to look for. However, when people are under the influence, if you've had any time around them when they haven't been, you'll know that there's a difference. Stay tuned. We'll return to talking more about how you can identify the situation and how, again, we have a tendency of seeing things through our eyes. And how we can actually put that aside and actually look at the real clues and figure out what's truly happening. Stay tuned, because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back this time in two shakes.
This is Jake Busey, and you're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. Tonight we're talking about what to do when you've had enough. When enough is enough. Dealing tonight, exploring drug addiction, alcohol addiction, and pharmaceutical addiction. And what to do when a loved one, a family member, or friend has completely gotten out of hand. And I know this might not be the funniest subject tonight, but you know what? This is a real subject. And you need to know what to do in this situation to avoid heartbreak, anger, resentment, a possible death, everything. And tonight, I'm going to tell you exactly, no questions asked. Remember, always more answers, less questions on Perspectives. I'm going to explain exactly how to deal with somebody who's an addict and how to get them help, how to identify what they need, how to see it, how to figure out the clues, how to have clarity to know what they're doing, and how to get them to help. And the reason why I'm able to do this show is that I have been on the sides of the coin helping people where it didn't work. I've been helping people to the point where I was codependent with them. And I've been where I've thrown my hands in the air and said, I give up, I don't know what to do anymore. And so tonight, I've figured out through lots of trial and error, how to deal with this, how to see it, and better yet, how to help them help themselves. First, we have to deal with the fact of how to identify the situation, because I think a lot of times we don't want to go into a situation half-cocked. We don't want to go into a situation where we make a snap decision, we assume the worst, and we jump to conclusion. And so tonight, let's talk about this real quick. I was talking about this in the last segment, how to identify the situation. How to look at the situation with honest reality. And like I gave the example of my dog, Dolce, before he passed, I had no idea. Because I was so close to the situation, but yet I also didn't want to deal with the reality that he was dying. And so instead of seeing how thin and gaunt he'd gotten, I didn't see that. And it wasn't until days after his death, when I was looking at pictures, when I realized how thin he had become. And on the flip side, how overweight I had become because of eating out of sadness. Because I knew there was a time when it was going to come that he was going to pass away. However, consciously, I was not dealing with that. Able to identify the situation with reality, being able to look at someone, look at their looks, their mannerisms, their weight, their health. Are they nourished? Are they malnourished? Do they seem off? Are they under the influence? You got to take off the glasses and see them first off without judgment, because you can't judge the situation, because when you start judging it, you just get mad. How could some idiot get addicted to heroin? How could some idiot get addicted to drugs? What kind of person gets addicted to pharmaceuticals? No. You got to catch out of that judgment. Get rid of it. It doesn't help anybody. It doesn't help anybody. I mean, everybody could judge anybody for anything, right? I mean, I'm sure there's things you could judge me on. There's things I could judge you on. But what good is that going to do us? We're all just going to get a little angry, a little disappointed. And unfortunately, we're just going to be judging each other to no extreme, to the point where we don't speak. And so the thing is that with the judgment, you got to let it go, because the only way to see clarity is to be a judgment-free zone. That's why perspectives is a judgment-free zone, because that allows us to have clarity. Because without judgment, when it's all full of judgment, there is no reality. Most of these shows that you listen to are all fear-based shows, based on a lot of judgments with little proof and little direction that's supposed to get you all angry and up in arms. Well, getting angry and up in arms isn't going to help a situation like this. Okay, so we got to start with a judgment-free zone. And let me make a caveat here. There's a caveat here that I think is interesting, is that we have a tendency to see things through our own eyes, right? Our own perspective, our own perception of things. And so we got to stop that. We got to see it from an overall perspective. Not the way that we would do it, not the way that we see ourselves in the situation, but to be open-minded. And this is really with anything. I mean, this doesn't even have to deal with addiction. This doesn't have to actually deal with trying to get somebody into rehab. Think about it. This actually transponds to anything that you're dealing with, being seeing things through a universal eye, seeing the situation with clarity, dispelling judgment, and being able to see things. So let's talk about the clues. The clues that you have somebody that you obviously care for is in a predicament and needs help, either with drug, alcohol, or pharmaceutical addiction. And the first clue is that the house is a complete mess. Usually, their house is a complete mess, and that's to say that they're going to let you over there. Now, the problem with some addicts is that they can kind of, they're kind of good at dealing with certain things. So, for example, if you give them enough time, heads up, knowing that you're coming over, they might clean up for you. Now, they're going to clean up to a certain degree. They're not going to be cleaning countertops and cleaning up, you know, cigarette ashes and all that stuff. But for the most part, it's going to be clean. Now, there's some key factors. One, the kitty litter box. If they have a cat, if the kitty litter box is clean, unless they've known that you're coming over and they've had enough time, that's a big clue. Most of the time when people are battling with addiction and they don't have a housekeeping staff or a housekeeper, the animals suffer as well. It's a sad state of affairs, because people with addiction allow their animals to suffer. They suffer, and they're not able to get out of the situation because they can't. And so maybe they're not fed very often. Maybe they sometimes go without water. Maybe the person that has them is up all night and all day and they never really get to sleep very much. Think about it. And so in these cases, a lot of times when somebody is addicted and has no housekeeping staff of any sort, the kitty litter box will be very dirty because they haven't been taking care of them. The animals will not be washed and the pets may be malnourished. It's kind of interesting how there's kind of a coordination. When somebody is malnourished, their animals are, because they're not eating and they're not thinking about feeding anybody. On the flip side, it's funny when people are kind of overweight, so are their animals. It's just a weird thing because they're thinking about eating and wondering if their animal has enough food to eat. The second thing is that their car is a mess. More with women than men. When a woman has a drug addiction problem, an alcohol addiction problem, or a pharmaceutical addiction problem, getting into their car is something you wish you didn't have to do. And I tell you this because this is across the board. You will see the back seat will be covered in fast food stuff, boxes, bags of stuff, clothing, empty drink glasses, bottles, you name it. Hangers, papers, newspapers, mail, anything and everything will be stuck in that back seat. Probably even in the front seat too, all on the floorboard. And it's stuff that's been piled in there for a while. And, you know, it's interesting because this is a key sign for women, especially with drug addictions and pharmaceutical addiction problems. You know, especially with the speed addiction, is that their backseat, their trunk is just a sty. And there's no organization to it. It's just trashed out. You know, also, they don't take very good care of themselves. They don't. Some people can. They can try to keep up the ruse for a little while if it's not too bad. But for the most part, most people lose the ability to take care of themselves. Certain things just kind of go off the rail. They can't take care. It's hard because they're trying to keep up a presentation that's far from reality. You know, a lot of times too, another clue is that their favorite saying is that they are sorry. They're always sorry about everything that's going wrong around them. And that's their favorite line they use to get out of things, to move on with things, because for the most part, they have a self-esteem issue, a self-esteem problem, and so they do feel like they are actually honestly sorry. When you're saying you're sorry, that means that you're lesser than, you're worthless. And they don't realize it, but the more and more they use that statement in that connotation without even them realizing, the more they put themselves down directly. When we return, we'll be talking more about the clues to know when somebody needs your help and what those clues are. And then we're going to be in talking about more about what to do and what the big giveaways are here on Perspectives. When you get a chance, check out AshleyBurgess.com. AshleyBurgess.com. BURGESS.com. Also, check out the AshleyBurgessNetwork.com. AshleyBurgessNetwork.com. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of Perspectives. Stay tuned because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back this time in 2 shakes.
You could be my luck. Get in here. You're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess. We'll be safe and sound.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. Tonight, we're talking about when enough is enough. We're exploring drug addiction, alcohol addiction, and pharmaceutical addiction, and what to do when somebody you love has gotten out of hand. You know, right before the break, I was talking about the clues. Once we open our eyes and see things with our own with reality, not our own chosen reality, we're able to understand when somebody needs our help, when somebody needs help in general. Because a lot of times when people are addicted, they don't know what to do next. And for the most part, they need direction, they need help, and they can't seem to get off of it on their own. And so some of the clues that I was letting you know about to allow you to realize that they do have a problem. The house is a mess, the car is completely trashed, they're not taking care of themselves. They like to use that phrase, I'm sorry, a lot of sorry for this, sorry for that, sorry this, sorry that. Another clue is that they're paranoid a lot. Paranoid that everybody's out to get them. Paranoid they can't leave the house. They're paranoid. Other thing is that they can be quite skittish. Some people can be quite skittish to the point where they don't like to leave the house. They can be stressed out. They jump a lot. And to me, those are some telltale signs. Another telltale sign that somebody is under the influence and needs help is that they don't make good decisions. They don't. They make very poor decisions when it comes to absolutely everything in their life. I mean, I just recently dealt with a situation here the last few days where I have a good friend of mine who I love very much got back into drugs. And, you know, she had been sober for a little while, I think, and had gone to a rehab facility. And instead of getting to the bottom of why she was doing drugs, instead of getting to the bottom to figure out what the real reasons were and to try to work with those reasons emotionally and to rehabilitate that person from an emotional stance, instead they just gave her another drug to replace the street drug she was using, and she got addicted to that. And then eventually, guess what? You have to keep upping the ante on that one, right? Because these people get a tolerance. They become tolerant to it, so they need more and more and more and more of it. And eventually it doesn't work anymore, and guess what? They turn around back to the street drugs. And every time I would talk to her, which was rarely, because I just had to safeguard myself, because I didn't know that she was back into drugs, but I knew that her addiction to this pharmaceutical drug was just as bad. And the last time I was over at her house was probably 6 or 7 months ago, and she had a drug called Suboxone. And this drug was prescribed to her by a doctor because she had been on heroin. And instead of tapering off on this drug, the doctor kept increasing her doses, which I think is highly wrong. And I think if they would have tapered it off, she could have probably figured out the situation. However, they never really worked with her inner self. And I remember the last time I went over there, before this recent time, she showed me the box of the medication, and she laughed. And I was like, what? She's like, if you took even one quarter of this, you know, it was like one of those like dentine, you know, like the things you put on your tongue, like the Listerine slips. That's how this medication formulates. So it's like one of those Listerine strip type things. Because if you took one quarter of this, you'd be dead. And yeah, I haven't taken heroin and stuff like that, so I'm sure that that's the case. But she was over there like, oh, you know, touting about how great this drug was and all this stuff. And I remember thinking, this is not right. It sounds like she's completely addicted to this pharmaceutical. Now, time has gone by, and honestly, a lot of times that can really wear you down. It's like a lower frequency vibration, and I get it, but sometimes we got to help these people. We got to help ourselves, help people to get over it, because it's not going to go away on its own. And so recently I called her up because I needed some help with a project. We were working on an offshoot show. And we needed to put some numbers together. We met with some bankers and some investors, and they wanted me to get a CEO to put some numbers together to really formulate a 5-year return. And, you know, great. And she used to be a CFO before she lost her job the first round, back when she was, before she went to rehab. And I said, hey, I got this idea for you if you could run some numbers. And I thought it'd be good for her to get her back into the groove, to give her something to do with her mind that puts her back at the same level where she was. And so she said, yeah, Call me back. Let's have a conference call. And I said, can we do a conference call at 3:30? Sure, sure. I'll be in front of my computer then. She sounded fine. I was like, this is going to be great, you know? So 3:30 came and went. Everybody that's working with me called me and said, what's going on? What's going on? Is the CFO going to get on the phone call? And I said, no, I haven't heard from her. But when I do hear from her, I'll call y'all and put you on conference call. 4 o'clock rolls around and she calls me. And I said, hey, how you doing? She's like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Which is a big clue again. I'm so sorry, 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 sorry. I'm so sorry. I was like, okay, you're not sorry. It's okay. Don't worry about it. Let's talk. And they're like, well, are we on a conference call or is it just us? I said, it's just us right now. And she's like, well, I need to tell you something. I said, okay, what is it? She goes, you're going to be really, really upset with me and I hope you still love me. And I go, why would I not love you? Why would I not love you? I've always loved you and I always will love you. I haven't always loved your decisions. I haven't always thought that you loved yourself because you haven't loved yourself. You know what I'm saying? Seriously. You haven't always loved yourself. You don't love yourself. And I said, but I love you. And she progressively told me that she had been doing heroin for several weeks and methamphetamines. And then I knew that there's no way that I could have her do the numbers for the project, unfortunately. And she proceeded to tell me how she almost got arrested at Walgreens. All kinds of stuff. And I started realizing that she can't make, they don't make good decisions. When people are addicted to drugs, they can't make good quality decisions in their life. They just don't. They just don't. They don't make good decisions. In their life, they make very poor decisions. I mean, they spend money on things that they shouldn't. They spend lots of money on drugs. They do a lot of things haphazardly. They do a lot of things just for the feeling, for the vibe, for the jump, for the oomph, for the energy, for the upswing, to feel that just that, you know, that high. And so I realized that she had told me that she had been back on heroin for about 2 weeks. And after listening for a while, I realized that that was a load of BS. But however, at least there was some honesty there. So in the last few days, I went and visited her and I spoke with her family and they are putting her into a year rehab. And I know a year might sound a long time to you, but for somebody, after listening to her and talking with her, I've realized that she has been doing drugs since she was 16. She's 42. You do the math. You can't cure someone who has a lifetime of drug use in a few months. It's going to take a year. So when we return, we'll be talking about more about the clues as well as Ashley's big giveaways to knowing somebody's addicted, somebody needs your help. Later on, we're going to be talking about how rehab works, what you can do, and how you can get your loved one into treatment and lose less sleep over it and feel better about your decision. And I'm going to give you the way exactly to do that tonight. So stay tuned because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. Be back this time in two shakes.
You're in a good place now. You are listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. Tonight we're talking about what to do when enough is enough. What to do when we have just been dealt a deck of cards with somebody we love that happens to be an alcoholic, a drug addict, or a pharmaceutical addict that can't stop. And I've been talking about how we can identify the situation because most importantly, in order to understand where somebody is, you have to understand the situation they're in. And the only way you can do that is to look at them in honest reality. To look at them in honest reality, to look at them for what it really truly is. A lot of times you try to sugarcoat it or try to put it in perspective of how it would be if it was us. You can't do that in these situations. And the way that we're able to figure it out is by looking at the obvious and taking judgment out. And this is for everything across the board when you're dealing with any human contact. Take all judgment out. Don't make any assumptions and see everything for what it is. Okay? We have a tendency of trying to change it, to manipulate it, to instruct it to be something else in our head altogether because we don't want to deal with it or we're not used to it. And what I figured out is that anybody that's a problematic situation, anybody that's dealing with that, anybody that's going through problems, there are red flags. The flags are flying. And they're not at half mast. They are up there. There are multiple flags. And tonight I've been talking about what they are and how you can find it. You got to take the glasses off and see it without judgment. You know, look at their weight, their overall look, their health. Are they malnourished? Are they under the influence? And the way that we do this is to get past what we've been through sometimes. And sometimes there's a few of us out here that may have gone through things in our past where we can actually cognitively realize that something's up. And what I'm saying is that sometimes we can go back into our past, and even if it's not drug or alcohol abuse, maybe it was just trying to sweep something under the rug that we didn't want to deal with. How did you react toward that? How did you react to somebody asking you questions? Think about eye contact. That's a big deal. Anytime someone won't give me eye contact, I know something is up. And it might not necessarily be the exact thing that I'm thinking, but they're definitely hiding something. And one of the big things that I figured out from people who are under the influence is that they do not like to look you in the eyes, especially if you are not privy to them being under the influence. So, for example, if you're at the bar drinking with your friends are probably going to look at you in the eyes because y'all are drinking together. However, on the flip side, if you are hanging out with your friends and your friend is not supposed to be drinking and it's during the day, they might not look you in the eye. If your friend is under the influence of drugs or a pharmaceutical drug, people might not want to look you in the eye because of the pupil reaction to the drug that they take. And some of the clues that I've figured out is the mess of the house. Some people's house is a completely disaster. And some people can clean up enough, but they forget the obvious. You know, what about the car is a disaster? For a lot of women out there who are addicted to pharmaceutical pills as well as drugs, their car is a disaster. There is stuff piled all in the back. There's everything from bags of fast food stuff to clothes to anything and everything. Anything. They have a tendency of, over a period of time, after being addicted for long enough, they don't take care of themselves. It's hard to eventually hide it, you understand? It's hard. And there's a lot of, like, you know, connections. You can see how somebody picks on their face. That's a big deal, is that when there are certain people who are addicted to speed and speed-type products, people who are addicted have a tendency of, like, they pick at their face. They pick at their body. They have a lot of, like, you know, open cuts and sores on their face because they've been picking at it. So, like, think about it. If you get, like, a pimple and you're on something like that, you might pick it to death to the point where you are bleeding. And people do this. And these are obvious things that you want to take into consideration, as well as a lot of people who are addicted have a tendency of saying, I'm sorry, I'm not. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for this. I'm sorry for that. And really, that's a really awful thing to say. I'm regretful is one thing, but sorry is not something. But they use that a lot to get off the hook. They use that a lot to fill the silence. They use that a lot to get past lies that they may have told and things they may have said. Also, they may be skittish and paranoid as well. A lot of skittish and paranoia. Everybody's after them. Everybody knows. Everybody's up to something. Everybody's trying to take them down. Everybody's trying to screw them over. And there's a lot of that, too. And so you have to be cognitive of direct attitude. And a lot of that can come from what? From no sleep. When someone doesn't sleep, even if they're not on drugs, they have a tendency of being paranoid. Now, couple non-sleep with drugs, and you're going to have an extremely paranoid type person. Or you're going to have the other extreme, somebody that doesn't even know what the heck is going on. Somebody that's so far out there that you can definitely tell Okay. They are so high, they're high as a kite. So those are some of the clues that you can think about, as well as when people are addicted to drugs, alcohol, and pharmaceuticals, they do not make good decisions. They actually make pretty bad decisions. They make pretty bad decisions because guess what? They don't have any clarity to make good decisions. There is no clarity. There is no thought. Oh, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. I'm drunk. I'm on cocaine. I'm going to get in the car and I'm going to drive around. It's an awesome idea. It's perfect. Think about it. The idea to have clarity to make good decisions is gone, or they wouldn't be on the drugs to begin with. They have a tendency of not taking care of things, especially animals in their custody. Animals that they have, pets, cats, dogs, they don't take care of them. They might think that they are, but they're only taking care of them when they remember it. There's occasionally a few addicts out there that the only reason they're still alive is because they're animals, and so they take very good care. However, that is rare and few and far between. I've known of some clients in my past who have taken very good care of their animals because that was kind of what they were living for. But for some people, they are so out to lunch on their addiction that they don't take care of themselves and they don't care of anything or anyone else. You know, one another key point to knowing that somebody is on drugs, pharmaceuticals, or street drugs is the tendency for some people to do drugs so much they forget to eat and they become super, super skinny. Super skinny, for the most part, is a ding, 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 ding. What do we have for them? We have a large methamphetamine addiction, and they're either smoking it, snorting it, or taking pharmaceutical version of the same thing and not eating. Anybody that has a daughter or son on Adderall knows what I'm talking about here, okay? They order a lot of food. They don't eat anything. They're up at all hours of the night. They're usually kind of in a bad mood. They have an attitude. They're hard to deal with when they seem to be coming down. And they seem quite paranoid and a little skitsy for most of their day. There's also a lot of avoidance. When people are addicted, they have a tendency of avoiding people. Why do they avoid? Because they don't want you to really catch on. They don't want to be caught, and so they're going to avoid you. But also, they kind of forget about it, but they just don't want to deal with people who are not in their headspace. You don't see a lot of people who are high on cocaine hanging out with people who don't drink and don't do drugs, okay? So there's a lot of avoidance there with people who are sober and who are cognitive of what's going on. A lot of people don't want to be outed. They don't want to have people realize that they're addicted to drugs, addicted to alcohol. So they're going to avoid you. They're not going to answer the phone. You're going to find yourself leaving a lot of voicemails. And you're going to realize that the only communication that they will eventually do, especially if they're hardcore avoiding you and they're on hardcore drugs or have been under the foot of pharmaceutical addiction for a long time, is they will communicate with you via text because it is impersonal and you cannot see them, or via Facebook Messenger. Yeah. When it gets bad and they're on Facebook Messenger, you know there's something up. And that's the only way they're communicating to you. And that's total avoidance because they don't want you to hear their voice. Because for the most part, they know that you're going to be able to figure out what's going on. And they're avoiding having real emotional connection with you right now because either they're high as a kite, they're remorseful, they feel guilty, or they're in the process of buying, getting, or doing drugs or figuring out how to get more drugs. Okay, so I just got off a text message with somebody that I know that I was working to put into rehab, and they told me that there's a stack of slips for pawn shops for things that they've pawned for drugs, and they told me that they have stacks of papers for that, and that they have a bunch of pawn tickets. They have a bunch of pawn tickets that they've left me on the counter that I can go through and pick up if I'd like to go through the stuff or donate it. So stay tuned. We're going to be talking more about addiction. And I'm going to start getting into the big giveaways. The Ashley's figured it out over a period of time. you know, doing what's not right and doing what's right to figure out how to deal with the situation. And later on in the hour, I'm going to give you the technique and tools you need to help get these people on a path of clarity and to get them cleaned up. Stay tuned, because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. Be back this time in two shakes.
Turn it up and jump in the deep end on Perspectives. Now, here's Ashley.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. Tonight, we're talking about when enough is enough. You know, when we're dealing with a family member, a friend, a coworker, anybody that we love that has an addiction to alcohol, drugs, or pharmaceutical drugs. And we've been talking about how to really recognize it. How do I identify who needs help? How to take the sunglasses off and see things, the nice clues, the clues that you're on to something. And then now I'm talking about the big giveaways. And you might ask, why are you doing a show on this? Well, I'm doing a show because I just now recently put a friend of mine in rehab. And I've done this on several occasions, but I've also done it where it's been definitely difficult. I've done it where it's been so much problematic situations, so much problems, so much drama. And then I've done it in the right way where it's still going to be dramatic, but it's not going to be so dramatic, as well as how to deal with the stress, how to tolerate the issues, but better yet, how to figure out how to take yourself out of the equation to some degree emotionally. And before I talk about exactly how you can take somebody from being an addict to getting them into a facility to helping them out and to doing that in a short period of time, I first want to talk about the big giveaways. One of the biggest giveaways is somebody is under the influence and is addicted, is that they seem to have no sense of time and space. Their biggest thing is time. They lack the ability to understand how much time has passed between something or another. And I know that for some of you might say, well, so do people that have brain trauma or have had brain trauma. Yes, I get that. But if the person has not had brain trauma, and you recognize when you ask a question, for example, I just recently asked a question of somebody that I put into rehab. I said, when was the last time you did drugs? They said 6 months ago. I said, okay, let me ask you a question again. When was the last time you did drugs? It's not been 2 weeks. Okay. So when was the last time you were sober? I've been sober for 10 years. There's a lot of inaccuracies as well as different changes on time. So, for example, I had a client that came in my office one time, and they had been arrested and then eventually and we were about to head to rehab. But before that, they told me that they had been in jail for 7 days. And their 7 days, their equation of what 7 days was 36 hours. So their ability to reason and to figure out timing was extremely off because they were in a dazed and confused state on drugs. And I'm not saying that everybody on drugs is going to be this way. Some people actually show up for work. Now, how long that lasts, you never can tell. How far off someone, it just depends on how far off the rails they get. You know, the next thing is that there's a lot of illogical thinking, a lot of negative thinking. There's a lot of negative thinking. Nobody's going to love me. Everybody's going to hate me. If somebody finds out that I'm doing this, they're going to hate me. And I've had several friends of mine that I've helped get to rehab where the first thing they ask me is, I have to tell you something. Will you hate me? And I said, you know, I'll never hate you. They go, will you stop loving me? I go, you know, I'll never stop loving you. You know that I don't love a lot of your choices. And you know that I don't love that you've done drugs, but it's not that I'm going to stop loving you as a person. And there's a lot of illogical thinking, a lot of negative thinking, but also a lot of overall assumptions. A lot of overall assumptions. And I think that that's a big deal because it just depends on what stage of drugs they're in. Are they flying high? Are they in a mania standpoint where they're going crazy, driving around in the car, going crazy, thinking everything's great, buying and shopping, buying big things, making all kinds of, you know, bad, insane, crazy assumptions? Or is it on the flip side where they've been doing drugs so much, but they feel so guilty about it, but yet at the same time, they're making negative assumptions? And so there's like all these different assumptions that are being made when people are on drugs. And you realize that, you know, in your heart of heart, when you see somebody that you love who's not acting the way that they usually act, who's acting maybe paranoid, maybe a little skitsy, maybe a little jittery, doesn't seem to be giving you eye contact, seems to be kind of avoiding you, only seems to call you or come around at certain specific times. There's a lot of real things that if you just open your eyes, it's not hard to see. It's not. And I know a lot of times we make it that way because we don't necessarily want to see it. I've had friends where their kids are in their teens and they said, you know, yeah, sometimes my son acts a little strange, whatever. And I remember going over to a friend of mine's house one time and his kid was 15. And he said, yeah, sometimes he acts a little strange, but you know how 15-year-olds are. And the kid shows up in the house and I'm like looking at this kid and I go, I was like, do you mind? And he's like, what? I go, I have some questions to ask your son. He's like, okay. And I looked at the son, I go, how long have you been doing drugs? And the kid about freaked out. And he's like, what? I said, how long you been doing drugs? And I said, hey, by the way, this has got to be a judgment-free zone. I care about your kid. And I knew that this particular parent would not go off on their kid, but would help. And they were like, about a year. I'd say, no, how long you been doing drugs? They've been doing drugs for 2 years. They've been doing all kinds of stuff, like cheese and heroin, all kinds of stuff at the school with their friends after school. And you could tell the way that he walked, the way that he looked down, the way his face looked, the circles and the dark shadows. You're not supposed to have dark shadows under your age of under your eyes at 14, okay? Let me just put that straight. 14-year-old kids don't have dark shadows under their eyes, okay? Most people, all the way until they're dead, don't have dark shadows. The only times you get dark shadows are when you're working 3 jobs to make ends meet. You don't sleep because you have insomnia. Or you're doing drugs, or you're drinking, or you're addicted to pharmaceuticals. Okay? That's really it. Or you're stressed out because you've been up because you lost the loved one, your spouse or whatever. You've been crying for several days. But the point is that outside of that, the norm here is an addiction of some sort. And you can just see in the mannerism, the way that person walks, the way that person acts, that something is not right. And so I implore you to step up and say, okay, hey, there's certain things here that are obviously happening. There's certain things that are going on. A lot of times, too, they're people that really are addicted get to a point where the fun kind of goes away, and now this is a way of life. And it's for some of them, they tolerate it for a while, but it's not until the end, when they are hitting rock bottom, that they realize that this is not working. And, you know, the biggest deal, too, is that, you know, with addiction has very many faces. There's lots of different addiction faces. You have addiction faces with, in the beginning, this kind of mania, this excitement, this new, this chaotic type of thing. You know, later on, you kind of have more like it's kind of like you're kind of like balancing. So it's the same kind of thing going on. And then eventually they increase their dosages because they're not getting off. They're not getting high as much as they want to. It's never as good as the first time, right? I think Sade said it right. And you keep raising the bar, right? As you keep raising the bar, you keep spending more money. And eventually, you keep trying to take more and more and more and more and more and more and more to get to that high. And eventually, you start realizing all the money and all the resources, and the drugs become a job. So mostly by that period of time, the job is gone, the career is gone, you're trying to maintain some sort of sense of reality, at the same time you're really not, and all the money's going to the drugs, and all the time is going spent to trying to locate the drugs, trying to find the drugs, and trying to figure out where those drugs are. And unless the person has somebody centrally located to them that's constantly giving them drugs, otherwise they're having to go out and seek it, find it, make calls, set up times to meet them, to pick it up, and eventually having to figure out where the money's coming from, pawning off things and what have you as well. When we return, I'm going to be talking about the facts of rehab. What's the fact of rehab? What's the percentage of it working? What's the different angles of rehab as far as how people get there, what they need to do, as well as how you can help somebody get to rehab and do it in a timely fashion? Because I've been on both sides of this equation, trying to get somebody in rehab, it takes 3 years, and trying to get somebody in rehab, it takes 1 week. So stay tuned. We're trying to be talking about the facts of rehab, how to do it fast, simply, and successfully, and how to get to move on with what you need to do. Stay tuned, because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. We'll be back this time in, two shakes.
This is Jake Busey, and you're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. Tonight we're talking about when enough is enough. When you know that somebody is addicted to drugs, alcohol, or pharmaceutical drugs, what to do and what's the next step. And I've talked about the giveaways. I've talked about identifying the situation, how to identify an addict, how to know that somebody needs help, the clues that are involved, how to get past judgment and move farther in. But also the big giveaways about how to know that somebody is off the deep end and definitely needs help. So let's talk now about rehab. Let's talk now about getting sober. Because that's what it's all about, right? It's all about getting sober. Because we have to get sober. People have to get sober. You can't live a life where you are completely and utterly addicted to drugs and actually like that life and have anything come about from it. And I've realized that being able to overcome drug addiction is one of the most difficult things in the world to do. To go from being a heroin addict, a crack addict, a cocaine addict, a cocaine and pills addict, an alcoholic and pills addict. Think about the combinations. To be able to let go of that, to rehabilitate, but better yet, to figure out why in the first place did you begin doing it, is golden. And you got to work with your psyche. So there's a lot of places out there that have a tendency of trying to get the client off the drugs, but they never deal with the inside part. And tonight I want to tell you the extreme importance of dealing with the inside internal mind and heart of the person who is currently addicted to drugs and alcohol. First off, FYI to y'all, I know that this is a scary statistic, but I believe that 7% of the time rehab works. 7% of the time rehabilitation from drugs works. Why? Why, you ask? Because most of the time rehab facilities do not get to the real problem. They deal with the Band-Aid, but they don't deal with the cut below the skin. What made you put the Band-Aid on in the first place? Right? The problem is the rehab just rips the Band-Aid off and puts you on something and gets you out there. But no, we want to take the Band-Aid off. We want to clean out the wound, figure out what the wound was from, clean it out, rehabilitate you, get you clean on all areas, and move forward. And that's why rehabs only work 7% of the time, because they're not dealing with the whole person. The second thing is that a lot of times people go to rehab that don't want to go to rehab. They're not ready for rehab. They don't see the value in rehab. Why am I going to rehab? I don't need to go to rehab. I'm fine. I don't need to go to rehab. I'm perfectly okay. Well, you know what? You're not, but you have to get to that point where you recognize and realize that you need to go. And that is very important with a success rate. It's like anything else. When was the last time you dragged your husband to the ballet? He probably didn't really like it that much. And a few people kind of got into it because they figured if it was the last 2 hours on planet Earth, they better do something with it. But however, that's what I'm talking about. When you drag someone to rehab kicking and screaming, they're going to find a way out or they're going to treat it like a joke. And that's the key, is that you have to find the person that's willing and ready to make the change in their life. And you can't force their hand because they're adults for the most part. If this is a child under the age of 18, that changes everything. However, again, it really doesn't. The kid has to want to get off the drugs. And so first off, the reason why it's such a low rate of success, one, you got to have the want and desire to kick the habit. Two, you have to actually find a facility or a place, or find someone like me that can help you find a facility and place that I know works directly with the whole person. And that's one thing that I do really well, is that I work within facilities where I'll come in where they're in a facility and I will do therapy sessions on them every other day to get to where we need to be at. And I've worked on this several times and I've gotten very far and we've overcome a lot of addictions. And I have clients today who are drug-free now for 3 to 5 years. This is amazing. And they're not like a dry drunk. They can be around it. They can understand it. They can deal with it. It doesn't bother them because they've not only have they gotten over the addiction, but they've moved forward in their life because they figured out there's a reason for their life. They figured the reason for living. They figured out that there is a purpose. I've helped people realize what their purpose is and how to begin to make their purpose a reality. And so that's the key, is that there has to be a formulation of therapy coupled with rehab, coupled with the desire to get better. So let's talk about this, because I've been on both sides of this fence trying to get people into rehab. And you know what? It took me one time 3 years. And I remember this person I tried to get into rehab for 3 solid years. Every single night would say, you know what? If you hang out with me tonight, I'll go to rehab tomorrow. Yeah, after buying that for a long time, I don't know what was wrong with me. I must have had some sort of concussion. So let's talk about this. Realize that addicts are very good liars. Okay? And realize no matter how much they say they're going to get better on their own, it's going to get worse. Because the only people who get better are the people that take their life in their own hands, get rid of the drugs, and say no. And they become very vigilant. They become very vigilant. And that is a rare, rare thing, to become that vigilant on drugs, to get off drugs. So for the most part, people are very good liars who are addicts. They lie about a lot. They lie to get their drugs. And they're going to lie to you about how bad it is. They're going to lie to you about that they're okay, they're fine. The biggest thing is that you have to rip that codependency cord away. Because the thing is that when we're dealing with addicts, a lot of times we have a tendency of becoming codependent because we get so connected and so wrapped up in the drama and so wrapped up in wanting to help other people that we become codependent to the situation. We have this connection cord that connects us and them. And when that happens, we have a tendency of falling for all the lies that they tell us. And there was somebody years ago who I did that with, that every time they told me something, I believed them hook, line, and sinker. Oh, okay. So you're going to get sober. Okay. So you're going to go into sober living. Okay. Next week. Okay, great. So this is how it's all going to go. Well, no, it never went like that. And it wasn't until I was forceful and I defined exactly how it was going to go down, when there was no wiggle room, did it actually work? And this is what you need to know tonight. If you're dealing with somebody that is addicted to drugs, alcohol, or pharmaceutical drugs, okay? They are addicted. They are not living a normal life. If you are dealing with that, first off, the first thing you have to do, if you care and love them and want them and want to see them get help and to change their life and to become a working part of society again, somebody that's contributing again, somebody that has purpose again, somebody that realizes that they are love and they're an amazing person again, or for the first time. A lot of people who have been using drugs for a long time have no idea their personal value. They put themselves down on a daily second-to-second basis, and they actually loathe themselves, hence their addiction to drugs to try to cure the pain. The first thing that you can do to help these people immediately is you have to be forceful and you have to define exactly the way you want to see something happen without absolutely no wiggle room. Okay, you can't have any wiggle room. If you allow wiggle room in this situation, if you allow some wiggle room in this situation, you will be doing all these steps again and again, year after year. There will be no sobriety, and you will be hitting your head against the wall, spending a buttload of money without anything to show for it. So the first thing is you have to be forceful. You have to define. And you have to show them by action. So a thing that addicts like to do is addicts like to talk. They like to talk a big sobriety game. They like to talk a big sobriety game because you know what? They want to get you off their back. They want to talk about how sobriety is so important and how they're going to be sober. And guess what? Don't fall for it. Don't fall for it. I have a bridge for you out here in the middle of nowhere, too, that I can sell you that goes over no water. Don't fall for it. When we were talking about how you can set defining rules, how to make no wiggle room so that the person you care about gets into rehab, gets where they need to go, and gets treatment. Remember, I have AshleyBurgessNetwork.com if you want to hear 24/7 perspectives, or if you just want to tune in for 1 hour, AshleyBurgessNetwork.com, as well as all my latest blogs, treatment sessions, the last 250 plus shows on AshleyBurgess.com. AshleyBurgess.com. Check out my YouTube channel as well, Ashley Burgess, or Twitter, or Spreaker. Ashley Burgess, me, Perspectives, will be back here in 2 shakes. You could be
my luck. Get in here. You're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess. We'll be safe and
sound. Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. Tonight we're talking about enough is enough. When you're dealing with somebody with a drug, alcohol, or pharmaceutical drug addiction problem, what to do and how to get them into rehab and treatment without hitting your head against the wall, falling into the codependency realm, and basically getting walked all over and lied to on a second-to-second basis. So the first thing that we want to do when we want to get treatment for somebody that we love and care about is to realize that addicts, they lie. It's part of their makeup. They lie about everything, so get used to it. So the last thing you want to do is be relying on what an addict is telling you. What you have to rely on is your own eyes and your own gut instinct, okay? Your gut and your eyes will tell you the entire story. Now, you have to get over feeling stressed out and really feeling upset or feeling violated by it because you have to get them treatment because you know what? They need it, and they need somebody strong to stand up to them. You know, you have to be fast, and you got to rip that codependency cord right out of that wall, because guess what? When we deal with addicts, a lot of times we become codependent. We become codependent because we're trying to help them, and we're trying to help them in a situation that's usually really not working very well. And it's not until we step up to the plate and become the adult and tell them exactly how this is going to go down will all this work. And the only way you can tell them how this system's going to happen and how all this stuff's going to go down is when you cut that codependency umbilical cord and be the leader. It's time to be the alpha male, guys. It's it. It's time. You're in it. Ding, 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 ding. On one corner, we have the alpha male. On the other corner, we have the addict. And guess what? The alpha male just tackled the addict, and they're going to rehab. Woo! Yes! We got one. You got to be fast. You got to rip that cord, but you got to be forceful. You have to define exactly what's going on with absolutely no wiggle room. In the past, I've dealt with situations like this, and I've been, oh, well, you know, we can talk about it, and we can figure it out. And addicts like to talk. They love talking. Addicts who are currently using love to talk because guess what? They're talking a big sobriety game that's never going to come to pass unless you step up to the plate. Because if you don't step up to the plate and you give them wiggle room to get out of this, they're going to wiggle right out of it. You're going to be doing this next year and the year after that and the year after that. And if you're related to them or you're financially with them, you will spend thousands and thousands of dollars and they will not get any treatment. You've got to focus on getting the treatment, getting them in for the best treatment, using the least amount of money possible to get them sober. But even more than that, you need somebody like me to help figure out their purpose and to figure out why they started doing drugs in the first place. Because until you get that down and figure it out, then the sobriety is just a ruse, because they'll find another addiction later on. Okay, so the way that you get no wiggle room, these are the steps that you want to formulate. You first off, research all places that you think would be a good spot for them to go to rehab. You could talk to somebody like me, a life coach, a therapist. You know, you could call me up, you can meet with me, or somebody like me. And we go through the possible choices and certain price ranges that you have. We also need to realize that we need to find a place that can take them in immediately. One of the biggest concerns that I have is that people are paying top money for treatment when they really don't need to. You do not need to pay top dollar for treatment. I believe that the most cost-effective ways of going about it is usually the best. When somebody has hit rock bottom on alcohol and drugs, the last thing they need to be going to is a $70,000 rehab. I recently visited a rehab called 180, and it's only $180,000 for 3 months. It made my head do a 180, I'll tell you that. Think about it. You don't need to be giving them opulent situations. If I was needing to go to rehab and I knew that I was going to be able to go to a mansion for rehab, wouldn't I want to probably do this again and again and again? Yeah. I know somebody that's been to 15 rehabs, all of them extremely expensive, and I think in total, their family spent well over $1 million. Well over $1 million. They were in rehab with Michael Douglas. They were in sex addiction rehab with Michael Douglas. They were in a rehab with lots of different people, like Nicole Smith. All these people. Come on, you don't want to do that. I mean, I hate to say it, but you really want to find a place that's moderate. Usually the average is $3,000 to $5,000 a month. Or you want to find a state-run financed rehab facility. You want to make this not like beautiful. It's not like they're going to the Four Seasons to hang out. They need to realize that they've hit rock bottom. However, a lot of people pay too much for treatment. You need to find the right place. You need to contemplate a few places and kind of figure it out, okay? And I understand if somebody's used to a certain level of lifestyle, you don't want to go completely the other direction, but you do not want to make this Club Med, okay? You don't want to make this like something that they look at and say, oh, this is fun. You want to make this responsible treatment. So first off, you make the timing, you set it up. Then you confront. And usually by the time that people are ready to go to rehab, they're already ready, but they're still using. It's time to confront, and it's time to make some visits over to the house. You're going to see a house in disarray. You're going to see somebody completely out of it. And you're going to see things that have fallen by the wayside. And hopefully this person doesn't have children or animals and pets, but they probably do. And you're going to see children or animals or pets that haven't been taken care of very well. So we got to figure out that next. The next part is to figure out who can help assist in taking care of the people that depend on this person while this person's in rehab. And usually there's a lot of compassion there. And usually because you're one of them, you will help in this process. And a lot of times too, if there were kids involved, there needs to be some sort of rehabilitation for the children as well. We do this swiftly and with conviction. The next step is if the person's living alone, and the house is not needed to be kept, or the apartment's not needed to be kept, you need to put all stuff in storage, move everything out, take care of all animals, plants, and pets, and children. Move everything out, put it into a storage facility. You're meaning business now, okay? There is no going back. There's no, oh, you can just check yourself out of rehab. No, because there's nothing there. You have to go through me to get your stuff once you're out of rehab and once you're sober and been through sober living. You got to go through me. You see how this works? No wiggle room. You don't want to give them an option where they can fall out of what is the right thing to do, right? Because in the end, even if they don't really feel like they want it, they need it. And eventually they're going to see it. And as long as they're in a sober living facility long enough, when somebody's been doing drugs for their whole life, it's going to need a year. Some people 6 months. A month normally doesn't work. However, if there is like a 3-month facility with a sober living component for 6 months, that might work as well. And you have to realize that when someone stops making good decisions for themselves, and this is what I tell my clients, when you stop making good decisions for yourself, someone else will step in to make the decisions for you. And so for anybody listening tonight who is addicted to drugs, alcohol, or pharmaceuticals, you get it. You are unable to make good decisions for yourself. You've let that fall by the wayside. And now it's time, and you hope that somebody can step in for you. Because remember, there's a lot of people out there that are walking the streets. They're called the homeless. There's a lot of homeless people that are dealing with drug and alcohol addiction, as well as pharmaceutical addiction, as well as mental illness. And some of those people have lost their entire family, or their family's completely given up on them, or they ran away from their family, or they're off their medication and the family doesn't know where they are. And so if you are out there and you have an addiction right now and you have somebody that's stepping in to help you, praise God that you have somebody there that cares enough to try to help you out. Remember, when you get in there and you do things swiftly and with direct compassion and direction, you are in charge. And remember that, you know, you have to do things kind of hard, and tough love is the right love when you're dealing with this situation. And on a higher note, remember that anybody that's going through this, they're human too. And everybody has their issues, but there's some that just take away from the human condition, and drug and alcohol addiction take away from the love and the beauty that is this world, that is this life, that is our purpose. Stay tuned. I got a great show for you next. And if anybody has any questions or concerns or is currently dealing with an addicted family member, friend, or spouse, please contact me. Go to my website at ashleyberges.com, ashleyberges.com, ashleyberges.com. Click on the contact page, fill it out, and send it to me, and I will contact you within 24 hours. Again, always more answers, less questions here on Perspectives. And if you have any questions, just contact me. Stay tuned. Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back this time in 3 Shakes.